friends.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Olivia.
And we are Podcast by Proxy, Canadian True Crime.
Welcome. We're live and we're hungry.
And I have special guests, which are my landlords upstairs and their children. I think they're rearranging their house right now, but... This is the only time we have to record, so I'm sorry in advance.
I was just talking to the lady that does my lashes about how, like, the dynamic between living in an upstairs suite and living in a downstairs suite. And I feel like no matter what, when you live in a basement suite, the people above you sound like the loudest people on the planet. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't even matter if they're tiptoeing around or just, like, living their regular life. Whenever you live in a basement suite, if it's not, like, really, really, really heavily soundproofed or something, they just sound loud all the time.
Yeah, I have lived in a lot of lower suites or apartments and stuff like that, and they've always been loud. And then I was, like, so fortunate with my condo that it had, like, the best soundproofing ever. But now I'm back to not soundproofing, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's so loud. And they have, like, 3 kids under the age of, like, 10.
Okay, yeah.
So there's, like, a lot of little feet. Mm-hmm. And the youngest is learning to ride a bike. So she's just been riding it in the house because it's been shitty weather, which... Good on you, girl.
Yeah, I just feel like you can do the most basic things and you sound like you're the loudest person on the planet.
Oh, yeah, you sound like an elephant on top.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. We're actually pre-recording today a week in advance because currently, when you're listening to this, I'm on the beach in Mexico.
Ugh, I'm so jealous.
I told one of my friends at work that I was going to Mexico and they were like, do the people at the airport just know you by the first name now? It's like, I went on one trip, man. Give me a break.
It's been more than one, hasn't it?
In
the last 12 months.
Say. Yeah, okay. It's been more than one in the last 12 months. But, like, the shorter ones.
Yeah.
Shorter ones.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Watch you walk in this time. They're like, hi, Olivia.
Well, I guess we're going back to Vancouver. I feel like we never fly to the same airport either. Like, I'm not one of those people that, like, has to fly out of a specific airport. I just go with, like, whatever's cheap. In this case, I'm going on a group booking. Like,
I go with the flight. Why not? If you can do it and it saves you money, group bookings are the way to do it.
Yeah. It'll be fun. I've never done that before, so. Anyways, enough about my
with a bunch of people.
Traveling.
Yeah, we, as we said at the top, we're both hungry, so we're gonna probably just get to it, unless you have anything you want to go over.
I don't, no. Last week's episode was really heavy, so I don't have much to go over.
I feel like I'm just coming down from COVID, or maybe going back up from COVID, actually, because it was really rock bottom, it felt like.
She's on the upswing, folks.
I feel like I'm just going on the upswing, so I have literally no news because I've been on my couch for 6 days.
I was going to say, you haven't done anything. You have to, like, leave your house to have news.
I mean,
I don't leave my house and I still often have news, but that's all.
Yeah, you're like, I don't have COVID. I really have no excuse, but. Yeah,
no. No, I don't have anything. So before we get started, make sure you're following us on Instagram or Facebook at Podcast by Proxy. Send us a Gmail, a case suggestion, podcastbyproxy@gmail.com, and leave us a 5-star rating and review. You can do the 5 stars on the Spotify, or you can also do 5 stars and a full, like, review on Apple Podcasts.
On the Spotify. You sounded like such an old person.
On the Spotify.
On the TV box.
Yeah, I always forget you can do reviews on Spotify. You can't write reviews, but you can do
ratings.
They're
so easy on Spotify. Drop down with the stars. Boom, boom. Done. Literally 5 seconds. Not even.
So wherever your listening platform of choice is, mine personally is Spotify. But of course, if you want to, like, write out a review, you have to go to Apple Podcasts. Now, if you have an iPhone, it's free. So, you know. It's included in your phone. You just have Apple Podcasts.
It's just there already.
Yeah, they just push it on you, so that makes it easy, but
they push it on you.
If you don't have an iPhone, it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Fair.
That's
it, does. Though.
That's the business from me today. Oh, actually, you know what? I did have something It's not Canadian, but if you've been following the Delphi murders for the last, well, what feels like
forever
now, I think, what is that, 2017 case? I'm gonna have to check because now
I was gonna say, I don't want to confirm that because I'm not 100% sure either.
Long story short, though, I will confirm when that case happened, but they have set a trial date, finally. So that's been going on for a really long time now, and we all thought that it was never going to come.
Yeah, I mean, that video was always something that people looked at and were like, we should be able to figure it out, but it's almost damn near impossible. So the fact that they've actually got someone is crazy.
Yeah, so the trial case for Richard Allen is now set to take place from May 13th to 31st, 2024. So coming up really, really quick here. And it was 2017. The two girls were found on February 14th, 2017. Near the Monon High Bridge. If you're unfamiliar with the case or you just want like a really good deep dive into the case, True Crime Garage has done phenomenal coverage of the entire Delphi case from like start to finish. I believe one of the hosts actually wrote a book on the case. That's actually one of my favorite shows. I love True Crime Garage. I've been binging them again. Sometimes I'll just like go a little bit of time not. So that I have lots to catch up on. But they have periodically over the 7 years that it's been since that murder happened. It was unsolved for very many years. Of course, we know Richard Allen was only recently charged. But they've done really comprehensive coverage, written a book, the whole nine yards. So check out True Crime Garage and all of their episodes on the Delphi murders if you want to catch up on that before the trial. But the trial will be starting on May 13th. So I will be watching that like a hawk. And that's it.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
I also think that it's just extra crazy because like when we went to CrimeCon, we also watched a conference with one of the victims' sisters and hearing like the impact, and at the time this wasn't solved, there wasn't a suspect yet. And it was still very much a call to action, so it's interesting to watch it all unfold too as we went and like got to see that firsthand account from a family member of what it's like to go through this and just telling what happened that day again.
So that trial date was actually just announced today, I believe.
Oh wow, it's like really
very recent. That's why I was like, wait, I do have something.
Hold on, I do have something.
Because I saw that today, but now I'm done.
Okay. Hey, not too bad. I'll edit a little bit out. We'll be about 7 minutes. Look at us. It's what we do.
It's your 7 minutes with Katie and Olivia before the true crime.
To some people, it's not 7 minutes in heaven, but whatever. Anyway, today I am going to tell you about a case from Prince Edward Island about a young mother named Shirley Duguay.
Okay.
On October 7th of 1994, a local resident had called in saying that near the back of their field, they had found an abandoned 1982 Buick Regal near the Tyne Valley area in Prince Edward Island on Highway 169. Police obviously dispatch out to the location almost immediately. When they're approaching the vehicle, even walking up to it, the officers notice that there's an unusual characteristic about the car, and it is that they don't have plates on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, this area is like a lot of really large properties, not a lot of people. Like, it's even for a small area, this was like a very farmy area of town. The car was tucked like 100 meters up like a driveway into some bushes kind of, and then pulled off of that into like the hedges kind of. So it wasn't really visible, but during the daytime, I got the impression that a few people could maybe catch a small glimpse of it, or the people that lived on the property had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when locals like around the area start to be asked and questioned, a few people can confirm that they've seen the vehicle there for a couple days.
Okay. And if the people that own the property don't know what it is, then it's sus.
Yeah. Well, and that the plates aren't on it and stuff like that. So it's just very unusual.
Yeah. I mean, often I feel like properties like that will have lots of vehicles abandoned on them cars. With not necessarily abandoned, but just like old cars, something they're not using anymore that just sit there, no plates. But if the people that own the property are like,
usually know what the car is.
That's not mine, then it's a bit suspicious.
Yeah, and I think just everyone in the area, because there is so few people and it's such a small town, it's like when something is out of place, they're like, hey, did you call Bob and let him know there's a car on his property? Nothing really goes unwatched.
Yeah.
Purely by accident there. So once they learn the car's been there for a few days, but there's no plates on it, they immediately reach out.
I even heard that.
They immediately reach out to what would be equivalent to like a DMV and police services to have the VIN number run to see who will get a hit on it first to get the information of who the car belongs to.
Okay.
The information that's run comes back to Shirley. She's listed as living in Richmond, which is a small neighboring town, like very small town. She's 32 years old. She's only 4'9" and 100 pounds.
Oh, wow.
She's like an itty-bitty lady. Yeah. She's so petite. Police call Shirley. They start reaching out to advise her they found her vehicle. But regardless of leaving multiple messages for her, they are unable to get in contact with her. And she's not returning their messages after a very short while. So they decide that they're going to just dispatch someone to go to her home and speak with her.
Okay.
And again, it's 94, so it's like, if she's not home, she might just not know they're trying to reach her.
Yeah, no cell phones.
But it sounds like they waited like a couple hours, though, and were like, okay, if you haven't checked your messages by now, even from work or something when you're out, because that was very common, I'm just going to call and check my answering machine.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
Yeah, I can.
I know, I'm just saying, it's so weird to think that that's not the norm anymore, and we think that's so out of the box when it's something we used to do.
Well, and, even running the VIN number. Yeah. In an article I read, it was, based on the time, this was not a quick process. And, it's true. They were probably... They could have been there for, 4 hours before that VIN number search came back. Because it's,
Right, and now cops are, running your VIN while they're behind you in the car
while driving. They're driving, yeah. RCMP go to Shirley's house. When they knock on the door, they're greeted by her dad and her friend Linda, who are already at the house. They advised that Shirley had actually left about 4 days ago when Linda was staying at the house with her, and her dad has since come over to the home trying to check in. She told her children that she was going to run errands and left them home with Linda, but never came back. The family hadn't reported her missing after 4 days, which seemed unusual to the RCMP because, she has 5 kids. Mm-hmm. So, you can't just disappear on 5 kids.
Yeah.
But her dad kind of, pulls the officer aside and says, she has a very tumultuous relationship with her ex, and he, at any moment, could try to take the kids from her. So if he was to find out that she, wasn't home or was missing, he would likely try to come and take the youngest 3 from the home because they're legally his children.
I see.
Okay. So they really thought that it was in her best interest after fighting for her kids and stuff that... not reporting her missing, because the police would probably reach out to her ex, Douglas Beamish, to see if he had heard from her, and then he would know that she's missing.
And then he would just come take the kids, and what if she comes back? Yeah, okay.
And they were like, it's going to be harder for her to get the kids back from him than us to just keep this quiet and look for ourselves.
Sure.
Yeah. Because, she had 5 kids, and there was once or twice where she had not really, taken off, but she had just, gone out longer than expected because she was like, I just needed a break.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Which, fair. Yeah. So, as we said, Douglas Beamish was at fear of taking the kids. Only her 3 youngest were shared with them, and they had actually previously had a 12-year relationship, but she had left him, got on welfare, and was trying to raise her kids on her own because he was severely abusive to her the whole 12 years.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Shirley.
Yeah, they were on and off for years, but he managed to always reel her back in, according to people around her.
As they do.
And that's quite normal, we hear. He would be horrible to her and then go to her and, "I'm so sorry, I love you, blah, 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 love bomb, love bomb, love mm-hmm. bomb." They would get back together.
Yeah.
This is no knock on Shirley. I think we've all...
They don't call it the cycle of abuse for no reason.
Nope. In 1991, while at the end of their relationship, just to show the intensity of it, Shirley was actually awarded a peace bond against Beamish so that she would be able to leave Toronto officially with her kids and no questions asked and create distance from him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would essentially, like, follow her wherever she went. He was always angry with her. He was harassing her.
Yeah.
He was just kind of always making her have to look over her shoulder. She yeah. never knew when, like, the other shoe was going to drop with him because he was so aggressive towards her.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, a peace bond is, like, a restraining order, but in yeah. Canada. We don't yeah, actually it's... call it a restraining order, contrary no. to popular belief. It is called a peace bond.
Which is, I also think that makes sense, though. Like, you keep your distance from each other. Like, these conditions will maintain the peace in your mm-hmm. relationship.
Yep.
That's all it is. I think it's fair. When Shirley got the peace bond and was allowed to move from Toronto, though, she wanted to go back to Prince Edward Island because that's where her family was, obviously, and her friends and stuff like that. But, like we expect, Douglas follows her back to Prince Edward Island
mm-hmm.
and continues his string of just, like, bad behavior. And he's in and out of prison for minor offenses. Like, he has a history. So he's just going to continue that in Prince Edward Island.
Give it up, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that she has his children, but it sounds like it has a lot more to do with harassing and following her than it does wanting to be near his kids.
It's not about the kids. It's about Shirley, and he wants to control Shirley.
Yeah.
It's messed up. Shirley frequently had friends like Linda, the friend who was there, actually stay with her. So, like, her parents lived just down the street, and if they were in town, she was fine to be home alone with the children, and she would just live her normal life, go about her business. If her parents were going to be out of town, though, she would ask a friend to come stay with her because she was worried that, like, Beamish might put the pieces together, like, oh, her parents are out of town, and come to the home because he had on multiple occasions. And in those circumstances, she would normally just, like, call her dad, and he would drive down the road and just, like, be there. But when they were out of town or on vacation, she would actually have a friend come and stay with her because she felt so unsafe.
I was going to say, it just tells you the level of fear that she has for this person and the pattern yeah. that has obviously gone on for so long.
Oh, definitely. Like, she's terrified of him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's itty bitty. And he is just, like, a very average sized man. Like, it would be like, he's probably a little bit shorter than your dad, for example.
Yeah.
But, like, similar build. Just, like, a regular guy.
Yeah.
And she is this tiny little, like, petite woman who could probably be fairly easily taken advantage of by most men.
Yeah.
And he knew that. Like. So, as we said, she didn't feel safe because he would frequently show up. And this last time that Linda was visiting, she actually confirmed to police that he did show up a few days before she went missing. And they had, like, a full-blown yelling match, like, at the end of her driveway, kind of, like, in her street area. And, like, she said it was so loud that, like, neighbors and friends around could hear it and everything. But she was really proud because Shirley totally stood her ground to the point where Beamish actually, like, just stomped off and got in his truck.
Hmm.
Which was, like, kind of unheard of. Normally he would stick around for a long time, really harass her. But he just showed up pissed because she was dating a new man, essentially. So now there's a new element to it.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that the most dangerous time in an abusive relationship is when you leave and when you move on.
Yeah. They are very, very unpredictable times.
Yeah. The loss of control is...
Yeah.
...is the scary part.
And from all accounts, like, Shirley was very happy with this new man in her life. They had just started dating. He was just, like, a fisherman from the area, just regular guy, and she was very happy with him for the short while they seem to be together.
Mm-hmm.
So the morning that Shirley got up to go run her errands, Linda was still sleeping, but the kids were awake, and by the sounds of it, the older two were, like, old enough that she could step out if there was another adult in the home, no problem, and just be like, let Linda know I went to run some errands, I'll be back in a bit. And she took off. So Beamish was living with his parents at the time, though, because he had been in and out of prison, so I think also he had a lot of free time to be harassing her as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Get a job. Go find a hobby.
He does have a job, because the next point I was about to make is he said that since the yelling match at the end of the driveway, they actually had a very positive interaction with no tension when she drove him to work the next day.
Oh, okay.
Now, apparently, as the father of her children, she does, it sounds like, tried to support him in working and having a job and, like, mm-hmm. being a good father. So from time to time, she would drive him to work if he needed a ride back and forth. But this is also Beamish's word. We don't even know if this trip to work ever happened.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Beamish suggests when he talks to police and tells them about this drive to work that he should really go look in Toronto because that's where they used to live and she has friends there and she would likely just go there to take a break. So why not go look there? But Linda and her dad are like, she wouldn't just leave her kids for days without telling anyone. And even if she did have, like, this snap decision to do something, she would have called when she got there and been like, hey, guys, sorry, I did this.
Yeah.
I'll be back shortly.
Yeah.
Like, she would not have just gone off the radar. That was too weird to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So police don't get very far with just questioning these few people at the beginning, so they decide to turn their attention to the car and the crime scene now. They've done the preliminary interviews, but they're not getting anywhere. Immediately when officers, like, actually get, like, their flashlights out and have, like, proper lighting to look in her car, they see that there's, like, this microscopic, like, misty, like, blood, like, little blood splatters everywhere. They also noticed what to them looked brown at the time is, like, red staining on the seat, and it is almost brown because there's so much blood there that they're able to see that there's a good likelihood whoever was injured here, especially if it was someone who was only 4'9", this would be too much blood for someone to survive. So immediately their stomachs sink and the investigation intensifies significantly. The DNA that they were able to collect was good on the scene, but because they didn't have any of Shirley's DNA, they did like what was called almost like reverse DNA testing. So they took her dad's and her kid's DNA and, like, crossed them over and found all the matching components and did a reverse lookup of a DNA to match her profile to be able to get enough reasoning match to say that the blood in the car was, in fact, Shirley's.
Okay. I was going to say, can't they just, like, so cool. It is, but I was going to say, can't they just, like, take something of hers from her house? But this is,
like,
the
a hair out of her hair.
This is the early 90s, so I understand that DNA technology was a lot different than it is now. But I feel like now you would just be able to, like, swab something in her house and find, like, skin cells or something.
Yeah.
But that's cool. For the, like, especially for the time, that's a really neat way to do it.
This is a very precedent-setting case in a way, and you will see why in a little bit, and I think you're just going to be like, what? So hold up, wait a minute. Once the blood's confirmed, police are immediately, like we said, ramping up this search. They bring out a helicopter, the whole RCMP team available, search and rescue, a search party of volunteers. They've set up a tip line. They have 60 cadets from a local force come out and assist. And then they also have the locals from where the car was actually found who all contributed in the search. Wow. Anybody on, they also had a psychic on the line. So that anyone who would give, like, an eyewitness account, because they knew it was kind of unreliable, they'd call with a tip and they would see if the person was willing to go under hypnosis and give their story so that they could ensure they were getting, like, every detail possible.
It's funny because I was just talking about True Crime Garage, and I know that people poo-poo, a lot of people, not all people, but some people poo-poo the use of a psychic in this kind of a case. And I actually thought that True Crime Garage had a really interesting take on that. And they were just saying that, like, they're open to police using every avenue of investigation, whatever. But
why block another resource?
Well, and they were saying that it's not necessarily that they believe or don't believe everything the psychic is saying, but they can give them potentially a place to look or start that they might not have already thought of. And so it's just another layer of insight and thinking into how you could go about solving the case that the police might not have had on their radar. And I thought that was really interesting. Rather than just seeing it as like black and white, you know?
Yeah, I think people think that ever, like, if you trust a psychic, you're going to take it at 100% face value. And it's like, no, it's just another tool in the toolbox for this investigation. Mm-hmm. It's not the make or break. And yeah. I mean, a lot of people kind of poo-pooed this psychic even, because this psychic kept saying, like, I am envisioning pine trees, pine needles everywhere, a very shallow grave, and she's very close to water. But police were like, well, it's Prince Edward Island. Everything's close to water. We're a tiny island.
Right.
Everywhere there's pine trees. It's what we're known for. And a shallow grave could just, that's just a random indicator otherwise if the other two were just common knowledge or in the area. But they still kept their eyes open, were open to the possibility, but knew that that was likely just kind of like how we read a horoscope. It's probably broad enough that...
Right.
If they were to find her, someone could be like, oh, that makes sense. But again, they weren't swearing it off. They just didn't give it a lot of weight. As mentioned, Shirley was 4'9". She had to sit on a pillow when she was driving her car because she was so petite, just like my sister-in-law.
It's amazing.
Like, my sister-in-law sits on a pillow. It's so funny. It's comfortable. But when the search party was out there about a kilometer from where her car was, they found the pillow that she normally sits on with markings on it that look like they could also be blood. And not far from those items, they located a t-shirt that did confirm have blood on it, as well as a shovel. When the shovel was inspected later on, it was also found to have two large black hairs on the shovel, and Shirley does have dark hair. So the hairs go to the lab. It's 94. This is going to take a while. So that's on the back burner for a bit. 3 weeks pass. No tips come in. No clues are found. Nothing further found in the searches. As a shot in the dark, the police ask 150 soldiers to come out and do one final search. And the reason that they're pushing for this is because they know where they're located. It's going to snow in the next couple weeks. And once it snows, all evidence will be covered, and there will probably be no luck of them finding anything to do with Shirley's case till the next spring.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And at that point, yeah, the clues could even be gone just because of the amount of water and rainfall. One tip had come in, though, that they hadn't quite looked into yet, and it was a person saying that they did see a couple on the side of the road arguing around the time of this attack, or presumed attack on her. So they focused their search on that area because it's a little bit closer to like a bog type material. So they think, let's look there in case they've moved her stuff, they've dropped her somewhere else. The soldiers find a Canadian Tire plastic bag with a leather type jacket and a pair of size 9 men's shoes, both of which have blood on them.
Huh.
The jacket also has some, like, large pet hairs in them, like, woven into it. So they're able to see that it could be someone locally and someone who likely has a cat, because it does look like cat hair.
Okay.
But did Beamish have a cat?
I don't think that narrows it down to 10, but did he have a cat?
Oh, you wouldn't think so, but... Snowball is going to become a large factor in this case.
Snowball
is a large, white, fluffy cat belonging to Douglas Beamish's parents.
Okay, phenomenal.
RCMP send the hair with a sample from Snowball to all the labs they can in Canada that would accept the sample for testing. unfortunately, everywhere in Canada is like, we're a human lab. We can't do this.
Right.
So they just say no. These officers, they get on the World Wide Web of 94. And they find...
the dial-up?
Yeah.
Beep, boop, beep, boop.
And they find an animal geneticist named Stephen J. O'Brien, who's actually done genetic mapping and testing on domestic cats.
That's amazing. I need them to do one on Marshall.
Oh, 100%.
He needs genetic mapping.
So they reach out to him and they're like, listen to us, O'Brien. Hear me out. What would you say to us sending you a sample and you doing, like, essentially a genetic mapping of Snowball? And the guy's like, well, yeah, this could, like, make my career if so. Like, this is crazy. Of course I will.
Absolutely, yes. Send it. Why haven't you sent it already?
Wrong. Of course I would do this. Like, what's the worst you're going to say? It wasn't possible?
Yeah.
Like... So this part made me laugh, though. Because he had agreed to do it, they now had to go get a warrant and get a sample from Snowball to send. So they show up at this guy's house, and the family's like, we're not helping you get the cat. So they just make the police chase Snowball around the house for, like, 30 to 60 minutes to catch him just to, like, snip a tuft of hair and, swab his mouth. But they have to take him all the way to a vet to get these, like, proper samples collected so they're done accurately and not contaminated. So these poor police go to this family's house. They're like, we're stealing your cat for a bit. They chase this thing around the house, get in a crate finally, drag it to the vet. This poor cat's just like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
Goddamn Snowball.
Let me tell you, if anybody had to come and take Marshall and I was like, nope, I'm not helping you get him, he would just walk right up into their arms. He would offer himself.
Hold me.
He would be like, hello, yes, can you take me with
you? He would just put his paws up, like, let me help you.
He's not a cat.
No, he's a little person in a cat suit.
He is. Anyways, that just made me think of that, because I'm like, there's no chance in hell anybody would ever have to chase my cat around for an hour. Like, he would just offer himself up.
Just sit on the floor, and he's like,
hit me? Hello?
You're here to see me?
Oh, my gosh, Marshall.
So they wrangle Snowball, they get him to the vet, they draw the blood, they cut the hair. But they are so worried that if this goes to court, that they're going to find some reason to deny this evidence. Sure. So the police are taking it, like, beyond seriously. To the point where Robert Savoy, who is the investigator that went to the scene with the warrant to, like, collect the sample, he read Snowball his Miranda rights.
He read the cat his Miranda rights?
He Mirandized Snowball.
Did they videotape it?
I don't know, but there was... I was listening to a podcast when I was driving home about this to see if there's any other details, and they were like, and what did Snowball say? And he's like, he meowed. Like, he says the cat, like, was like, okay, yes, I understand.
That's hilarious. Okay,
they Miranda.
He read him his, well, in Canada, it's not Miranda rights, it's charter rights. Yeah. But okay, he read him his rights.
I just think it was funny that he even said, like, in the article, it was like, they Mirandized the cat.
That's so funny.
I think they just wanted to use the word more than anything, because everyone knows what it means. But it was just so funny that I was just picturing them talking to the cat, and he's just sitting there like, okay. January 4th of 1995, an RCMP officer was asked to take the sample in hand. So there was limited, transfer of authority with the sample. So there was less margin for error. So one officer travels the whole way to the States to O'Brien to give him all these samples, like, hand to hand. Sure. Just like, here you go.
Yeah, they want to make sure it is transported safely and nothing.
They know there's a lot of margin for error, and this is really all they have.
I still can't get over the fact that they read the cat his rights.
I know.
It's amazing. Okay.
What if they put him on, like, the stand after? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Meow.
I mean, look, I love that they're being diligent and they're, like, they're crossing all of their T's and dotting all their I's.
And no one's laughing during this. Like,
no, they're taking it very seriously. Oh, so seriously. We're laughing. Yeah. That's hilarious and awesome.
So the cat hair gets to his lab. He does all his testing on the hair. And he finds that the likelihood of a hair that matches Snowball's would be like 1 in 45 million because cats can't biologically produce a twin.
Right.
So okay. Like human DNA, the cat DNA is actually pretty good to work with because biologically they just can't do it.
Hmm.
Not only that, but Snowball has quite a rare patterning within the style of his hair, and that even when he took a sample group of 20 other cats in the area that they took blindly to submit, he said that no others were similar to it. There's no way that statistically there would be another matching hair sample in the surrounding area on this island, and he is confident that it's a full match for Snowball.
Okay. Okay. I mean, look, it's phenomenal. But it's hilarious.
Hilarious.
Imagine being this guy and being like, my cat just outed me.
Imagine being the parents who were like, wait, sorry, you're here to do what? Snowball, the police are here to see you. Like, and again, this is not laughing at the case or Shirley in any way. This is such precedent setting. And since then, in Canada, US and Britain, other hair samples from pets have actually been used now that this shows that it works.
Why isn't there a documentary about this?
There is actually one episode about it, but I could not find it, so I wasn't really wanting to link it because the episode's not available. When I find it, I will, because I need to see this.
There should be a whole series on Netflix about this. This is phenomenal. Okay.
I know.
Snowball is
Is a pretty in-depth book written by that Stephen J. O'Brien. Something about a cheetah, and then there's a lot of references to this case being perfectly handled in headlines and stuff because the cat pun, so really writes itself.
Amazing.
But May 3rd of 1995, a man is going out to do some spring fishing. He sees that there's an unusual looking brush pile where he would normally enter the water. And the branches look like they weren't put there organically, like they didn't fall from the tree. They look like they've been piled, so to speak. He approaches it, and when he looks down into the brush, he can see that there is a heavily decomposing body within there.
Okay.
This location is about 15 minutes away from where her car was found. The body is badly beaten, hands behind her back, tied. And as we said, heavily decomposing already. Even though testing wasn't done and there was no official identification done, police were confident that it was Shirley for a few reasons. Prince Edward Island actually has very, very few missing people, as well as Shirley's stature and other indicators that they didn't release at the time matched Shirley's description.
Right.
Pretty much to a T.
I mean, Prince Edward Island has no unsolved cases as of now, so.
Yeah, so it sounds like they kind of set him up, knock him down pretty quickly because it's a small population.
Yeah.
Shirley's cause of death was blunt force trauma to her face and head. She had 3 locations in her jaw which had been broken. Her nose was broken, which they believe is where the fine mist of blood came from her trying to breathe through her nose after.
Mm-hmm.
And the more further in-depth autopsy when investigating the inside of Shirley's body, they find that she had actually aspirated one of her own teeth in the attack because it was quite brutal. So when she took a deep breath, one of her molars actually went into her lung.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Once details were released, everybody wanted to see this guy burned at the stake. So the big question was, will they allow the cat hair in trial? Like, will that be officially allowed?
They better. Snowball didn't go through all of that for nothing.
I know. Snowball was... He really just, like, complied with police. He was very helpful. But yes, because of the additional evidence of the clothing found, the car... and other, like, circumstantial pieces prior to actually having found Shirley's body. They were willing to move forward with the evidence. And then once the additional supporting information came in, it was just, like, a big stamp of approval. They were like, of course, you have other supporting evidence.
Amazing.
Yeah. Shirley's trial lasted 9 weeks, and an ex of Beamish's actually testified as well, saying that years prior, when they lived together common law, he would severely beat her as mm-hmm. well. He would drink heavily and have friends over and be horrible to her. And as soon as the friends would leave, the violence would severely increase as well. One time he grabbed a knife from the kitchen while her kids were sleeping, and she refused to have sex with him. So he held her at knife point, had sex with her, assaulted her. And then when they came out of the room, her kids were in the living room because they could hear their mom being attacked.
Yeah.
And when she kind of like went to console her kids and comfort them, he grabbed her, held the knife to her again, and continued to attack her in front of her kids.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. It's also unusual because she stated that after he had attacked her, he was like, I need to take a bath. I need to relax. And she called, he you took the knife to in relax. There with him. Yeah. But then he calls her in there and then, like, gets her to, like, lean down to him, kind of. Like, come here. And, of course, she's scared, so she's complying. Yeah. And, again, I'm sure there's some people out there that go, like, why would she even go in there? He's in the bath. Why wouldn't she take off? It's not that easy, people.
No.
It's not. But he, like, grabbed her and, like, pulled her down and, like, bit her. Just bit her face. Like, he just... That's lashes out. It's super weird.
Yeah.
And again, he like took this giant knife into the bathroom with him too. Like he was just, you could tell he wasn't over being mad at her yet.
Yeah.
For no reason. Prosecutors obviously want to show that history repeats itself. This is who he is at his core, along with minor offenses over the years. He should not be trusted. A letter was presented to support this, from Beamish's writing that said that if, like things with Shirley didn't go his way, he would kill himself, Shirley, and their three kids, leaving the other two, it seems like, to fend for themselves. The letter looked as though it was like signed in blood, but it was never confirmed if it was his blood or her blood or... If it was even real blood, it could have just... I'm pretty sure it was blood.
We're gonna go. And when do they allege he wrote this?
Prior to attacking her. It could have been from a long time ago. It was not dated.
Okay. Fucked.
Yeah. Investigators took molds of Beamish's feet earlier in the investigation because they knew they had the pair of shoes that were the same size as his.
Right.
And when they took the imprints and put them in the soles of the shoes, it was like a perfect match for his feet. So they were also able to tie all the clothing to him because he was like, that jacket's not mine. I don't know what you're talking about. But they were able to locate a picture from him 24 hours earlier wearing the jacket.
Oh my God, so like,
dude, don't even try to lie that it's not your coat.
That's kind of cool, too, though. The investigators really pulled out all the stops for this case.
I'm again, shocked at, for such a small town, what they were able to accomplish.
And, like, for the early 90s, that's pretty advanced, like, thinking and...
Yeah. They were really on it.
They really were. I'm impressed.
Good old Savoy. Reading the cat his rights. He's really...
I'll never get over that. It's amazing.
It's incredible.
And, like, so cool that that started the use of, like, pet DNA being able to be used in cases.
Yeah, like, I saw another one in, like, the UK where they used someone's dog hair.
Snowball set the precedent.
It's crazy. And it was all because there was just, like, some tufts of hair on the inside lining of the coat.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't even a lot of hair on it because he didn't live there that long.
Right.
But it was just those, like, 10 hairs or 20 hairs that got him. And we all know what it's like to get pet hair and, like, a certain material. It doesn't come out.
No.
So, like, he probably... That hair would have been there for a bit.
I had cat hair or somebody's hair. I'm assuming it was cat hair because my dog's... Well, she sometimes sheds. But it was like embedded underneath my computer mouse today, and I had a hell of a time getting it out because it was messing up.
Have you ever
up.
Had one of your nails start lifting and have a pet hair under it?
Yeah.
That one so annoys me.
Yeah.
Especially when I can't find my tweezers and my nails are too thick to grab it. I'm like, oh!
Yeah, pet hair. I never thought of that in a criminal investigation. It really will out you, though.
Yeah, it's like glitter at the strip club. You never get rid of it.
Just glitter in general.
Glitter in general. The Crown had a jailhouse informant as well that they had... They were at first questioning if they should take his information, but once they realized that he had been held with Beamish, because Beamish was held with no bail, he actually had, like, excessive details about the case and was able to give a lot of detail about Shirley, so they actually took his account as well and used it in their as a testimony in the trial, because he was found to be, like, quite reliable, and with the detail involved, they were like, yeah, I think we can trust him.
Well, I think
that
they
was a
have,
huge factor.
They have enough at this point that they're not relying on that testimony either. They're just using supporting. It as, like, supporting evidence, so yeah. Makes sense.
Totally. Beamish was found guilty by the jury of second-degree murder. It was originally tried as first. However, with the time that had passed with the letter and not having a date on it, mm-hmm. the jury didn't feel confident to use that as premeditation. And the jury felt confident in getting the second degree conviction.
Yeah.
Which it sounds like all parties in the trial were pretty okay with, because they don't know what level of premeditation went into this.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if he had the shovel in the car prior to things like that. So we can't really say for sure.
Mm-hmm. Premeditation can be very hard to prove. It's where you see this a lot.
Yeah, and they did state that he had some mental health issues and he wasn't always the most stable at times, so that could have been a letter written over 12 years,
mm-hmm.
and that was just too unreliable to count on.
Mm-hmm.
In 1996, he was sentenced to life with no parole for 18 years on his second-degree murder trial, or charges. The last two appeals that he had done after that were, like, immediately denied. No new trial was awarded, and there was no reason to believe that there was inadequate support provided during the trial, which is essentially what he was trying to say.
Right.
During his stay in prison, he was, I don't know, not, like, terrible to have around, but, like, he was pretty negative. He didn't really do what he was told, but, like, he wasn't talking back or anything. He was just kind of like, meh.
Right.
And didn't really, like, fall in line.
Mm-hmm.
But he did refuse multiple urine samples he was supposed to do. And he really just, like, wasn't that cooperative with, like, his team that was there to do his case management to help him get ready for parole.
Right.
And that was kind of when they were saying, well, like, if he's not even willing to work with us and just being kind of a dick, like, how badly could he want to go back out into society? And this makes us think that he would be at a really low rate to properly reintegrate now.
Yep.
Because he's not showing signs of, like, striving to be out there or building life skills. He's just like, I didn't do it. Just let me out.
Yeah, like, if you're not even going to try in here,
then what do you want?
What makes me think that you're going to try out there?
Yeah, it's bullshit. The parole board and the therapist that was doing his assessments said that he showed no risk to, like, the general population on a day-to-day basis. However, mm-hmm. he would pose an extremely high risk to anyone he entered in an intimate relationship with.
Yeah.
And they worry that he wouldn't be completely honest and accurate about any relationship he was to enter. So his application for day parole has been continuously denied on those terms. Mm-hmm. And because he will not admit any ownership still of the crime.
And that's the biggest, I mean, the part about having absolutely no want or trying to change at all or participate in your own
success,
case management, reintegration, things like that is one thing, but not even being able to admit what you've done, we know isn't going
to
get you very far.
Yeah, you have to own up to it.
Parole system, so.
Yeah, it's about accountability. That is really what it is with the parole board. They want to know that you've learned your lesson and you're willing to own that you made a mistake and you did something.
Yeah, I know I've mentioned this one before, but that always just makes me think of Kelly Illard.
Yeah. That is completely perfect.
Yeah. She's like the poster like child parallel. For... No, I didn't do it. I'm never going to admit that I did it. Let me but go. Please let me out. Be in here. Like, you're never, ever, ever. There's never going to be even entertained until you can take some ownership for your actions. That's like the most basic ask.
Yep.
Especially when there's enough proof like there is in this case and in that case that you are guilty. It ain't ever going to happen. But yeah, that always just makes me think of that situation.
Loser Kelly. Mm-hmm. On October 4th of 2022, when applying for escorted release from prison, Beamish reported that he finally had just kind of had a change of heart. He needs to make amends for everything in his life because he's now had 3 heart attacks, he's in kidney failure, and he just wants to not be living out the rest of his days in the Dorchester prison. However, the last 2 things that they pointed out before potentially looking at his 12-hour escorted release was that he needed to discuss why he thought it was okay to stage a hunger strike because the food was terrible, mm-hmm. and why he also thought it was okay while in his minimum security prison that he got angry and threw a butcher knife he was working with in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those things said, though, they were like, okay, we'll give you 12-hour supervised granted release.
Okay.
So as of 2022, there's no other updates, but he is still granted sporadic 12-hour release with supervision to be able to head to a Moncton halfway house and start to build a process to integrate him back into society and work with additional resources outside the prison walls. Because his next goal is to have full release and be able to move into the Moncton halfway house full time.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Look, it's not that I don't believe in releases. I very much
believe. I don't believe in his release.
That there are people who do take real ownership and do successfully participate in their own reintegration and can be rehabilitated and reintegrated into society. Not that I don't believe in that process in Canada. I've said it before. I just don't think certain people have the ability to do that. And I, even just hearing, oh, I want this because I'm sick and I don't want
to. I'm at a point in my life.
I don't want to spend like, the rest of my time in prison. Like, it's not about you.
Yeah.
And as soon as I hear that, I'm like, nope. No thanks.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think that this person has actually owned up to anything. I think he said enough words that sound right to sound like he's doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think we also get to a point where sometimes the parole boards are like, well, shit, we can't really hold them anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's the reality of it. If he served his time, quote unquote, he hasn't been a huge issue in the last little while. He is making some positive strides. Mm-hmm. There is also a need to turn over in prisons, and unfortunately, these are the ones that will get turned over, no matter how harsh the crime, because the time has been served, they've checked certain boxes, and it's just, it feels like it's what the government feels they have to do.
It's the system.
Yep. Yeah. But that's my case.
Wow. That was a roller coaster.
Wasn't the pet hair thing cool, though?
That whole case was very interesting. I'll give it to you. It was a very interesting case. Snowball is
my hero.
A national treasure.
And even after the trial, people were like, where's the cat? And his parents were like, it's just our family cat. Like, he's still at home. He must be protected at all costs. He didn't go anywhere. Like, I don't know if people thought he was going to, like, join the police force after. Like, he had a full-time job.
But, I'm
like,
really disappointed they didn't bring him to trial.
You know what? They might have, and maybe that would have sensationalized it too much so it wasn't really reported. But, like, God, I hope Snowball got his moment to shine.
That, if they didn't, that's a huge missed opportunity. Like, this is the cat.
I hope I can find, like, a really good picture of Snowball. And also, in every article I read, there were so many, like, cat puns. But, like, but some were, like, what was the funny, one of the funny ones? Well, there was a few. there was one that was, like, they had replicated, like, the OJ, like, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. And it was, like, if the cat hair's a match, you must, like, something, like, they made one of those up.
Phenomenal.
There was one that was, like, oh, so-and-so's trial really snowballed onto him there. And, like, they just kept finding all these puns to use. And I was, like, okay.
Look, the case itself was brutal, but that did add a layer of...
lightheartedness, almost.
100%.
Which is rare, and yeah, I think it's weird that we found something that, like, amplified that, but... Snowball, thank you for just being part of this case, because otherwise we never would have caught this guy, I don't think.
Cats
are heroes. Or it would have been one we would have solved years later with DNA, but it probably would have been solved more, like, now.
Yeah. I'm surprised we don't see more of these with, like, pet hairs. Now that I know it's
wonder if they keep those ones a little bit quiet because it's kind of unorthodox.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe people will start planting pet DNA. Like, I don't know. It would be really easy. I could go to your house and, like, pet your cat and then go, like...
You could. We've established that. Anybody could. Literally yep. Anyone.
It's Marshall.
Somebody could steal him. Please don't, but, like, you could.
It wouldn't be stealing.
Huh?
It's not stealing when he goes willingly holding their hand.
Mm-hmm. He would.
But they have snacks.
They look so nice.
They just said they wanted to pet me.
Yeah, 100%. He is a little
attention. As he's walking out the door.
People, like, walk in my house and he's like, meow, and runs over to them and rubs all over them. He's like, hello, pet me.
He's so cute. I can't wait to have him.
He's coming to your house tomorrow for vacation, so I hope you're ready.
I'm so excited. I am. I have 4 days off work, and him and I are going to snuggle.
He's going to be so happy because he's been kicked out of our bedroom for days.
Well, he was a bad cat. He did bad cat things.
He did.
But I think it's time we go eat.
It is. Thank you for being here. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. I've been posting a lot more case photos and things of that nature. Subscribe or follow wherever you're listening. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Case suggestions, you can send them to our email or put them in the list on our link tree, which you can find on our Instagram. I think that's it.
I agree. I think it is too.
Phenomenal. Have a great dinner.
Have fun on vacation.
Bye.
Bye.
I'll call you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
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 How do I stop this shit?
I'll stop it.
Okay.